You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of TFL Car Chat, and we're going to be chatting about... Hey guys, welcome to another fun and fantastic Tommy episode of TFL Car Chat.
That's right, and in today's vodcast, we're... too formal. Let's just start rolling and get into it.
I wasn't formal, I was fine.
You've never said to me, hey Tommy, welcome to another episode.
All right, let's start again. All right. Tommy, I just got back from San Diego.
That's very cool, Dad, because you were driving some really interesting cars.
Yeah, there were two journalistic car presentations this week, programs, as we like to call them, in the biz. One was for the brand new 2025 Jeep Wagoneer S, and the other one was for the iconic Tommy Toyota 4Runner. And it was interesting because Andre went on the 4Runner, and they had a complete blanked-out embargo.
Yeah. Total media silence about everything. We couldn't share a single photo or a piece of media. We probably shouldn't even be talking about it. That is what it sounds like.
Uh-oh. Did we break embargo by talking about it?
Hopefully not, but this is a real shame because...
Well, here's a question. Can you break an embargo by talking about an
embargo? For sure.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this week for you watching this, there will be complete 4Runner wall-to-wall coverage because... that's all I can say.
Yeah, Andre got a lot of good content out there with Case surrounding this new car. So he's really excited to share the footage starting on the 28th, I think, of January.
That's right.
So Tuesday over at all the channels, Car and Off-Road on Wednesday, we're going to have various videos.
And should we break the big news right here on the Car Chat podcast?
What you got there?
Well, what's happening with us in the 4Runner?
That's right. So we're buying one.
Yeah, can't wait.
And it should be here any day. So why don't you tell the fine folks of the audience how we ended up with the 4Runner?
Well, we ended up with the 4Runner because it hasn't been refreshed for 15 years or so. And we thought it was an important car. So we decided to, unfortunately, trade our Defender in on the 4Runner. And it is at the port of LA. And we are waiting for it to hit the dealer so we can go pick it up.
I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty devastated.
Because you love that Defender.
I do absolutely love that Defender. I think it's, you know, the most interesting car that I've driven in a long time. The two-door Defender 90 with the four-cylinder and the steel wheels. It's the holy grail spec.
Except they don't sell. Because I went around to all the people that buy cars from us when we're done with them, and I asked them, are you interested in buying them? And nobody wanted it because they said that these guys sit on the lot for an average of 75 days. Mm. So people do not like or do not want the two-door Defender. And in fact, we took a huge loss on it. We bought it for 53 and we're trading it in at 41.
Yeah, so that's $12,000
in 4 months.
Yeah, which is terrible. Now, we bought it with about 10,000 miles. It's got 16,000 miles on it now. But that is a tremendous amount of money to lose in 6,000 miles. That's the problem with semi-new Land Rovers. That's why when I buy my Land Rovers, I buy them when they're already at the very bottom of the depreciation curve and they're worth $4,000. Because if you buy them when they're still worth 40 or 50,000, over a couple year period, you may lose 20 or 30 G's.
Well, did you know that the Land Rover does a 4 year or 50,000 mile warranty on them?
Well, everybody in the comments is going to say you need it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, what you're paying for is that warranty. So this one has now 16,000 miles. So it's got, 34,000 miles or 2 years of warranty left on it, which you would think would help increase the price, not help it decrease.
Well, listen, it's to your point, it's a very niche vehicle. you know, when people are buying Defenders, they do want the four-door, they want the six-cylinder, they want the air suspension and the nice interior. This bean can four-cylinder is not going to appeal to your typical bougie Land Rover buyer, but I love that car. I'm so sad to see it go. I'm gonna be honest here. I don't know if I'm that excited about the 4Runner.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so we can talk about pricing because that's been announced already.
And we can talk about what we know. Andre hasn't told us anything from the program. This is just the stuff. He's been strict about the embargo, but let's talk about the stuff that we know from the launch of the car.
Yeah, so I actually, you know, went to see it a year ago, and I fell in love with the Trail Hunter, which I think we've got on the screen right now. And the Trail Hunter is, of course, the new top dog next to the TRD Pro. But at that time, when I fell in love with it, I didn't know the pricing on it. And the pricing on it is breathtaking, Tommy. Guess how much a TRD Pro or Trail Hunter 4Runner costs?
$54,000.
Try $68,000, $69,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some big money.
Yeah. And so I wanted to just get a TRD Off-Road, and I wanted something that was relatively affordable, but because we want to be first, because in journalism, that means that you get the vehicle while there's the buzz around it, while people are still interested in it. We had to go with the TRD Off-Road Premium.
Yeah.
And so ours is 56, which is also pretty staggering amount, considering when we bought our Taco last year, it was like around 45. So it's about 10K more than a Taco. And let's face it, they're very similar vehicles, right? The Taco and the 4Runner share a powertrain. They share an interior. They don't share a bed.
One of the things which is interesting is pretty much every other manufacturer. Like when we bought our Ford Maverick, we ordered it. We got exactly the spec that we wanted with the color and the interior options and the hybrid. But with Toyota, it's, as far as I know, it's much more difficult or in some cases impossible to actually custom configure a vehicle and order it. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. So the way Toyota works is they have these regions and then the factory basically builds what the factory wants to build. Mm. And they ship the cars to the regions and then the regions ship them to the dealers. And if the dealers want a specific car, they have to kind of trade for it.
Interesting.
But you can't really go and specifically order it. I mean, you can order a Toyota online, but chances of you getting that thing are not like set in stone.
That's
interesting. You have to actually find a dealer then who's willing to find that car.
So ours is interesting. Let me pull up the Monroney here.
Right, pull up the Monroney. It's you know, I would have loved once again, our color palette in America is so boring. Oh my God, it's so boring. And the 4Runner does come in a lot of different colors, but because dealers are very conservative and they don't like having wild colors because they don't necessarily sell, the typical colors are black, silver, white, and gray. And so that was our choice. Black, silver, white, and gray. So what can you guess what I chose? Black
white,
is right out.
Probably
exactly.
White.
I chose white, yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking for it here. I don't have it. That's interesting. But it was
it.
So it's a TRD Off-Road Premium.
Yep.
And it had a couple of dumb options which I wasn't excited about. Like it's got the running boards, if I remember correctly, right? Does that sound right to you?
I don't think it has running boards.
Pretty sure it does. So it's kind of a more city slicker. Sorry, we should have been more prepared here, Dad.
It's not a city slicker.
Well, it's a TRD Off-Road, which is awesome. It's gonna have the locking diff, which is great. But it's got like the leather interior, right? It's got the heated seats and some of the nicer features there. But I don't know if I'm excited for the 4Runner. Is because I have a kind of an interesting relationship with the 4Runner in general, in that living in Boulder, Colorado, or actually I live in Berthoud, Colorado, you see 4Runners absolutely everywhere. They are like Tic Tacs at a gas station. There's a million of them, and they're all built pretty much the same. When people do it, they all do the same 2-inch lift, and they all do the same style wheel, and a lot of people all do the same KO2 tire. So part of a quirk of me, mine is like, I don't love going with what everyone else is going for. And just seeing so many of them, it's hard for me to get excited about another 4Runner. But I have to remember that this is an all new vehicle compared to the old one. It's got a new powertrain, which I'm really excited for. And I think they've done a really good job differentiating the different products. So one of the problems with the current one is like an SR5 and an off-road or a TRD Sport. They all look sort of similar, but not that different. The new one looks pretty different. Okay, here we go.
I found the sticker.
All right, so 50-state emissions, obviously. Power tilt slide moonroof, paying $850 for that.
Yeah, I don't need that for video.
Sirius XM, $350.
Yeah, it's an extended Sirius XM. So we're getting it for like, I think 3 years, except we don't keep the cars for 3 years.
Yes, 33 month added.
Yeah.
Cargo cover.
That's cool.
Floor mats. That's nice.
Yeah.
Door edge guards, front colored key, tow ball mount.
Yeah, we got the tow hitch.
Badge overlay, front emblem black, and the badge inserts Toyota matte black. Okay, that's good. So we don't have the running boards. That's
no,
good
no
stuff.
No running boards.
And that brings our total price up to $58,318 after a $1,500 dealer destination. So I appreciate that we wanted to be first. The interesting thing, though, Dad, is deliveries have already begun.
Yeah,
some we are not going to be first on this one.
We're not going to be first.
Yeah.
Can't have it all, Tommy.
Can't have it all.
You know, the when it gets to the dock, it's anybody's game, right? Because then there's all kinds of things that have to happen. They have to prep it. And then, of course, you have to load it on the truck, and then it may not be, you know, a priority. So we're just sitting here on pins and needles waiting for the dealer to say, hey, we got it.
Are you excited about it?
I am excited about
it.
Okay, good. I love off-roaders, and the 4Runner is, you know, up there among the iconic pantheon of the greatest off-roaders. So, you know, it belongs in the same sentence as a Wrangler, as a Bronco. And so I think people are going to be super excited because, like I said, we haven't had a new one. Well, it's 10 years, but more like 15 if you really think about it.
I think you're right. It's been a long time, and I have to remember that even though they're everywhere, the reason they're everywhere is because they are, in some cases, some of the best vehicles on the road. And even though I get frustrated seeing them on every corner, every time I drive even the current generation 4Runner, which has been around since 2010, I do kind of fall in love with it because it is such a utilitarian, usable vehicle. I think maybe that's some of my big skepticism around this new one. They've gone to a lot more tech and screens. They've gotten a turbocharging, and that maybe is where some of my concern lies. But I'm going to go in with an open mind, and hopefully it impresses.
Yeah, I just worry, once again, every new car that comes out, I always think it's $10,000 too expensive, and it feels like that for the 4Runner as well.
Yeah,
it just seems like $56,000 for a 4Runner. Now you're getting into Land Cruiser territory, basically. So our premium TRD off-road basically costs the same as a 1958 Land Cruiser.
A little bit less, because I think that starts at 58.
Starts at 55.
Does it really?
Yeah, so it goes 55 for the base, and then the Land Cruiser is 65, and then the first edition Land Cruiser is 75. So basically, the top end of the 4Runner, if you're not talking about TRD Pro or Trail Hunter, ends where the Land Cruiser begins. And the question is, which would you rather buy?
Well, which would you rather buy?
I want to do that video.
I
want to compare the two.
One of the big appeals of the Land Cruiser for me is the full-time four-wheel drive system, which I think Toyota is still being stingy about with the 4Runner. I think you can get it as an option on the Limited. Someone will definitely...
No, I know that for sure. You can get it. There's like the street... The city slicker version, you can get full-time all-wheel drive, but on the off-road, you don't get full-time four-wheel drive.
But I'm finding, like, talking to a lot of people in our community that drive 4Runners, that is their number one frustration. I've heard this 3 or 4 times in the last 2 weeks that they want full-time four-wheel drive in their 4Runners.
Well, gives you a reason to get a Land Cruiser.
But they make you really, unless you want the Lux models, they make you, and Jeep figured this out on the Wrangler by offering that Select Track full-time auto system on a lot of different models. So I think that I'm going in this with an open mind. I think that the Tacoma we owned, except for some of the initial troubles we had with it, was overall a very solid, potent truck that surprised me. And honestly, the turbo engine at our elevation is a huge advantage.
Now I'm looking at the interior of the TRD Pro up here on the screen, Tommy, and man, that is identical to the Tacoma. That dash layout,
yes.
The vents, you know, the... screen, that is just a copy of the Tacoma. So it's identical to the Tacoma, basically.
Well, what we found for a lot of certain generations of 4Runner have been more or less related to the Toyota truck.
Specifically the first gen.
Yeah, the first gen. Very much related.
Yeah.
Basically the same. And then we've kind of seen the paths divert a little bit over the generations, but now they are right back to being related, which I think is a good thing, potentially. And I really do like the design of this new 4Runner. I think it's very bold and much more aggressive than the outgoing model. So I think there's a lot of cool potential here. I just wish, like you said, it's about 10 grand cheaper than to be really.
Hey, here's something interesting I've been pondering. Why didn't they do a convertible? I mean, the first gen was a convertible. The Bronco is a convertible. The Wrangler is a convertible. Why not a 4Runner? Because really, that's its competitive set. Those two vehicles.
I mean, 4Runner hasn't been a convertible since the late 80s.
But it started out that way,
right? And I think
they showed one at SEMA.
There's a good shot that we are going to get another Toyota off-roader convertible in like an FJ Cruiser form.
I stand corrected. They showed Tacoma with a rear seat. It wasn't the
yes,
which is
right.
basically a 4Runner without a top.
Yeah, it was pretty cool though.
It was cool.
They did a good job with that.
Yeah,
I think that was that not based on a 4Runner? It was based on a Tacoma.
I think it was a Tacoma with a rear seat. Yeah,
thing?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
But it's hard to tell them apart. I mean, they are so close to each other.
Do you want to move on from the 4Runner? I have a really interesting thing to tell you.
All right, tell me. I'm listening.
Cole might be able to find this. I think Road and Track did a story on it. So there was Bear Jackson happened this past week, as you know. Big auction, I think in Arizona.
Yeah.
I remember right, Scottsdale.
I've got something interesting about that as well.
Okay, maybe we're thinking about the same. Are you thinking about a car that sold?
I'm thinking about a car.
Is it a Corvette?
No, I'm thinking about the Demon.
Okay. This is absolutely wild. This is a C6 Corvette with an LS3, but essentially a base model Corvette.
Yep.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It has an automatic transmission.
Yeah.
It has the clear paneled roof.
I see it.
And it's got 65 miles.
Yeah.
So basically a new Corvette, right?
Yeah, 2012.
This came from an auction lot of Corvettes.
Yeah.
One sold from the same lot. It was a Z06 with 13 original miles on it. And it sold for $77,000.
Wow.
Okay. This car.
Sold for $300,000.
$300,000. It's slower. It's an automatic. It's less desirable in every single way. Someone paid $330,000 for a base model Corvette for a 2012 LS3 bean can. What the heck?
I don't know. Those wheels would just keep the wheels are completely chrome.
The whole thing is awful. It's an automatic. Yeah, it's old man spec.
Yeah, the chrome wheels would put me off.
But
right away.
What do you think happened? Why did the more desirable version with less miles go for $77,000 and this thing went for over $300,000?
Well, there's something else that happened. And maybe the two are related.
What happened?
So five Demons went across the lot, and they were all kinds. There was one with the front, passenger seat deleted. I think the most they could get out of for a Demon was 125.
Ooh, coming down.
Yeah, and not just coming down. They took a pretty massive dump in terms of value. Oh. Like somebody decided Demons are no longer the it car, and maybe people decided that instead of Demons now, we're going to start collecting Vets because a lot of Vets did really well. But yeah, it's funny how much Demons came down. Here's the thing, Tommy. Once upon a time, there was a small group of people who loved to collect classic cars because they love cars. And then in the last decade, the cars have become commodities, right? People collect them because there's been this huge run up in value. So the people who are collecting them, especially let's call them wrapper cars, right? Cars that have never been unwrapped, right? Because you never drive it. You just buy it, you hold on to it, and then you hope to sell it for a profit. This is no longer a thing for car enthusiasts. This is now a thing for traders on the New York Stock Exchange, right? People who are too smart for their own good and who are buying these things as commodities so that they can later flip them. And all of a sudden, I think all those guys called each other up and said, hey, the Demon's no longer hot, so dump them.
They're
and
not
did.
Calling each other up. There's why, no, like,
why did Demons come down like anywhere from 50 to 80,000 overnight?
I think what happened was there was It had its time in the sun, and I think that it
they didn't build that many.
They did, but it's now it was a new car.
Yeah.
And then it was an exclusive new car.
Yeah.
And that brings a lot of value and exclusivity. And now it's just kind of dipping down into used car territory. This happens.
Well, these demons had no miles on them.
Yeah, but it happens to every car. I mean, even something as special as a 300 SL Gullwing for a while was just a used car. It was a special used car, but it was a used car. But
in the last 5 years, especially with these kind of, let's call them collector grade cars.
Sure.
Porsche GT3, GT3 RSs, yes. STs, right? I can go down the list. They never had that dip. Like a Porsche Dakar today is still, those cars were 250,000 new. They're still 300 to 350,000 if you want to buy one. They're still 50. They never had that dip.
They just went up. They will have the dip because the Demon is, I think, a 7-year-old car now.
Yeah.
You know, the Dakar is a 1-year-old car. It's still at that new crazy phase. I think you wait 6-7 years, it's going to dip before it comes back up. I think, yeah, like Demons, like I said, and maybe 170s are...
But that was the thing that happened recently. It never happened where, well, Ferraris, for the most part, were, especially the supercar Ferraris, those were cars that you had to be asked to purchase, right? You could never walk into.
Yeah, sure. And that's still the case.
Yeah.
Still the case.
Yeah, and that kind of went downhill, you know, to the 12 cylindry. But I've been watching those Ferraris, and they're also coming down. The brand new 12 cylindry is also... You know, and so is the Roma, and you know, so the 96 is also not doing well.
It's also about like what's in the public eye, and what is the exciting? I keep wanting to say glory hole. I don't think that's
God, that's horrible.
What's like?
Oh my God,
wonder child is the word I'm looking for. What's the word that describes something?
Hey Cole, can you post delete that please?
He can leave it in. It's a mining term. There's a show. What's that Alaska show?
It's a bathroom term.
It's not a bathroom term. It's the word that's like wonder kid. You know, there's
what's
like
the car?
It car.
Okay,
the glory hole car.
No, don't say that.
The glory hole car right now is the GT3 Porsche.
Okay.
Right? That's the car that's in the zeitgeist.
I think it's the ST.
Sure, ST. Good ST, one. Yeah. Right? And the Ferraris are just not resonating right now.
Well, especially since they went, basically the 8-cylinders became the 6-cylinders. But we're kind of getting out of our depth with these cars. The other thing that may be happening is, you know, we're maybe in for some rough waters in the economy. And we're starting to see those first wave of the rough waters come in where people are you know, not as excited to invest in Demons. Not as maybe. Eager to spend as much money, and the people who have them are trying to dump them. So we may be seeing like a return to more normal days when cars actually did have a huge depreciation before they started to bounce back.
Well,
up.
I think we're also like more or less in the post-COVID world, right? Because in the COVID world, it just went crazy.
Yeah,
for
it
every
went
car
crazy. Yeah,
with the chip shortage,
stupid crazy.
Yeah, so now we're returning, and even 9/11s are coming.
But let me bring that back to our people. Do you think that the Foreigner is going to sell over sticker?
No,
you don't think there'll be any. I bet you there'll be dealers asking
yes,
for a sticker.
I think the initial allotment of TRD Pros and Trail Hunters dealers are going to be asking over sticker for.
Yeah,
but I think within a month or two of more and more Foreigners showing up on lots, that's going to go away.
All right. Well, should we talk about the other car that we bought? Because we did buy a severely depreciated, what Haggerty called a supercar.
Yes, I know. I'm kind of grumpy about the situation. So one of my dream cars.
Yeah.
It's a very, very cool car.
It was the second car ever reviewed in my career.
Yes. And that's why I loved it. Because as a kid, I got a chance to ride in it. And I loved the James Bond movies. But it's a 2007 Aston Martin V8 Vantage. And this is such a cool dream car of mine, and they have gotten really, really affordable. So this is a car, it's got 46,000 miles on it, and we were able to buy this car with a manual transmission V8 in good condition with some service records for 33,000 US, which is insane.
This is a car that, of course, has made the rounds, not our particular car, but Doug had one for a long time, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He was known for having it. But at 33,000, how could you not? So we traded basically our second model T, our old 1915 model T, on for this Vantage?
Because it was at the Ford dealer.
Yeah.
It was that someone traded this car into the local Ford dealer,
yep.
Brighton Ford, and then the owner really wanted our Model T next to the Model A he just bought from us,
yep.
To have like a little collection. So I broke my heart, but we sold it to him. And then in trade, we got this Aston Martin V8 Vantage, which is awesome, except it drives phenomenally, sounds amazing.
You know, the brakes squeak like a stuck...
Brakes squeak a little, but like the suspension's good.
Yeah.
The radio's good. It's got heat and AC. 33 grand. I mean, what
navigation doesn't work.
Navigation
does not
work. Which
is not a bad thing.
So then we went to get it insured, and that's where the problem started.
Yeah, Hagerty said, because we use Hagerty for our classic car insurance, and they said specifically that you can't drive it.
They targeted me out specifically.
Yeah, they said you can't.
Saying I'm not allowed to drive it. And for the record... In the past almost 12 years I've been driving,
yeah.
Never had a speeding ticket, never been pulled over, never have had an accident.
Well, there are some advantages to being old.
Yes. But that's crazy that like, and they said that it's because of the data, right?
They said because they classified it as a supercar, and it's not that super.
It's not that fast.
390 horsepower today in a world of, 1,000 horsepower demons is not exactly supercar-ish.
Yeah, the crazy thing is like they would insure me on a Tesla Plaid. Remember, they talked about Plaids. That's fine. But
no, they said that they didn't say they insured you. They said they would insure a Tesla Plaid.
Okay.
Yeah, because they consider that a classic. They said the actuarial tables on this car are not good. So in other words, the people who buy them tend to wrap them around trees. That's how I interpreted it.
But it's not really that fast of a car.
Is it's 60, not, no.
When new, 5 seconds. Now probably 6 seconds.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, the Model 3 performance we had would dust this thing left and right.
Yeah.
So now I can't drive it, which is a little bit of a shame. But it still is very good to look at. And I'm glad that you can drive it and do videos with it. And that's pretty cool.
Well, it's a beautiful car. You know, I mean,
it's funny.
They built the Vantage for like 15 years and there's a reason.
Aston Martin flew me out to France
to drive the
$350,000 brand new DB12.
Yeah.
But then I can't drive a $33,000 V8 Vantage.
Yeah. Life isn't fair, dude. So, and then of course, the second we bought it, it started snowing here and the roads got crazy. We don't necessarily... we don't plow a lot of our side roads. So right now the thing is stuck in the barn because if we got it out of the barn, we couldn't get it back in the barn.
Yeah. So it would never go back home.
Yeah. So it's very frustrating to buy a car and not be able to drive it at all. But that's kind of the big news on the TFL front. Shall we talk about my program with Jeep?
Sure. Where'd you go?
So I went to San Diego and I drove the new Wagoneer S, which is an all-electric Jeep. It's, in fact, the fastest Jeep the Jeep has ever built. You might be thinking it's the Grand Cherokee Trackhawk, which did 0 to 60 in like 3.5 seconds. This does it in 3.4.
Mm.
600 horsepower, Tommy.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, and unlike the Toyota embargo, this guy was driving impressions were embargoed. So I could talk about, the style of it. I could talk about utility and such. But I can't talk about driving impressions. Those videos come out at the same time the Toyota videos come out. So you can see I'm showing there, it still has a 7-slotted grill, which it doesn't really need because it's all electric.
It's not really a grill. It's more of an applet. There's no airflow through
that
grill.
Yeah, there's no airflow. Yeah, because there's a frunk.
Yeah.
And it does have all-wheel drive. But the one odd thing is it's only got about 6.5 inches of ground clearance. So there is a sand mode, there is a snow mode, but this thing's not going off road, at least nothing beyond a dirt road. There's your frunk right there.
No, you're 100% right.
It's a good size. I mean, it's kind of the right size. It's not too big. It's not too small. It really does do very well in terms of comfort, interior comfort. And if we get to the inside at some point, this particular one, and you can kind of see it now, had this radar red interior, which was really cool.
Let's take a look.
Yeah, I think there you go.
Oh yeah, that does look cool.
Doesn't that look cool?
I mean, this I had a chance to see this. Oh geez, we got an ad for a CX-70.
There you go, a free one for you. Oh, it's got the same interior. You had a chance to what?
I had a chance to check out this car when it was debuted in.
Seattle show.
No, it was in New York.
Yeah.
They pulled the covers off it. And the big takeaway for me was just how luxurious it was. It was really, really, really luxurious.
So what they try to do is they try to keep it relatively straightforward. So there are 1, 2, 3, 4 screens. The passenger gets a screen. But like they still have the buttons behind the steering wheel. So remember when you were a kid, I used to kind of spook you with changing channels and putting up the volume. So you can still do that. There's a power button. And so the idea is like there's real buttons on the steering wheel, so you don't have to get those haptic buttons. The steering wheel is relatively round. There's a square top and a square bottom. It's got the two-spoke wheel that the Grand Wagoneer has. And, you know, they have real controls for Vent, Yahoo. And then, of course, it's super luxurious. They're you know, massaging seats. Even the bolsters come in and out like on a Mercedes.
Nice.
And it's like I said, it's a good size. And we put up the video, and a lot of people, of course, because it's electric, immediately hated it. It's a funny world we live in, Tommy. Nobody gives it a chance just because it's electric.
Well, I don't think it's that so – it is definitely that with this vehicle. But it's also the price point. I mean, we're looking at over $70,000 for a relatively small – crossover SUV that competes with the Model Y that's in the 40s, right?
Yeah, this one's the first edition is 72. With that, you do get 303 miles of EPA range. You get about 100 kilowatt hour battery, around 200 kilowatts of charging speed. The only thing you don't get is really Jeep's, off-road ability.
Yeah. We're having problems with the ranch here. I'm trying to figure out.
What's going on?
The freeze sensor went off upstairs.
Okay.
And it's screaming at my wife.
Okay, can she turn on the little heaters up there?
Yeah, she's turning them on.
Okay,
yeah,
the electric heaters.
She has them going right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Uh-huh.
So is it not working downstairs either?
I don't know.
Can she run out and see if there's enough propane in the back?
We'll probably have to do this off of the podcast.
Okay.
It's going to be a phone call.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well... do you need to stop? I can keep going. You want to go give her a call? I don't want...
Would you like me to?
Yeah, go, because okay. You're very distracted and it's hard
don't want the pipes to burst.
Go give her a call and I'll keep talking about the Jeep. So one of the cool things about this car, of course, is that it is crazy quick with 600 horsepower. So 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds, like I was saying, is becoming insane. I remember when I was a kid... And muscle cars were, you know, the fastest cars out there. And you could get yourself a CUDA or you could get yourself a Mustang. And maybe if you got it set up for a drag strip and you got the right tires, you could get yourself maybe a, 14, maybe a 13-second car. And now you can just go to your local dealer and get yourself a 12-second car or lower. I mean, you can get yourself a Lucid that'll do it in 9 seconds. Same thing with a Tesla Model S Plaid. I guess I kind of wonder why there's so much electric car hate. Now, you guys are going to, in the comments, immediately say that what I'm trying to do here is basically promote electric cars, or I'm somehow trying to sell electric cars. And I got to be honest, I'm agnostic. I don't care what powers the car. I care, how it drives. And how fast it goes and how it goes around a corner. So to me, the drivetrain isn't as important as the car itself. And yet today we're living in this world where the second you say electric, the first comment is EV piece of you-know-what. And that just is astounding, because give the car a chance. Just give it a chance. I know that there's all this political baggage that comes with electrification. So now we've divided ourselves into two camps, the camp that won't let people take their Hemi out of their cold dead hands, and the people, that believe that electric cars will save the world. And both of those are extreme views. Let's kind of try to come to the middle somewhere and just, look at them as things that either work in your life or don't work in your life. Okay, I'm done. I'm done ranting, and hopefully Tommy's back so that I can move on to talking about Toyotas. Anyway, I want to thank Jeep for letting me test drive this. And that video is coming, I believe, on the 28th. So if you care to see how it drives, go check it out. Everything okay at the ranch, Tommy?
Yes, I think so. The heater isn't working upstairs, and she's freezing. So she's bringing in more space heaters.
Okay.
But it is working in the garage. So.
Okay. All right. So something's going on with the upstairs heater again. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's good. So we have propane.
The usual problems.
Okay, this is country living, Tommy.
Yes, I know. Yeah, we also have some kind of little critter in our attic, just screwing all over. We got to go deal with that. That'd be a very funny video.
Do you want me to help you deal with a scurrying? I think it's a squirrel.
Maybe that'll go viral. It could show me getting attacked by a rabid squirrel.
I think they did that in Christmas Vacation.
I think they did. That'll be exactly what it's like.
What do you think of the design, Steve?
I don't hate it, actually. I think it looks very sleek, but I don't understand why they're building this.
I mean, it competes in that hottest segment, right? It competes with the Model Y. In this case, the new Model Y Performance. It competes with the Lyric. It competes with the Blazer EV, right? This is the hot segment.
But Blazer EVs, they have to discount the beans off of to get to sell.
Yeah, I mean, Stellantis has not been on a roll recently. I think, you know, you're doing a video, can Dodge sell the new Charger?
Yep.
And they're already, I've already heard the discounting Chargers, even before they hit the dealerships.
Yes, by quite a bit. So I'm kind of a little concerned about where the direction that Jeep is going in, right? I think that they should be focusing, in my opinion, on more affordable, rugged vehicles that reach a wider audience.
That's the thing I don't get. So look, even, you know, the lonely Compass and Patriot had off-road cred.
A little bit.
Right. This has no off-road cred.
No. But did you see they did show a Trailhawk version at the launch?
I'm hoping.
Did they have that here?
In the video, I said that hopefully there will be a Trailhawk version that will come along.
Did they bring the concept?
No. They didn't have that.
Okay. Yeah, so they had it at the event.
We don't know if that's coming or if that, you know, is a prototype. But I'm hoping it does come. Because look, the thing about both Jeep and Land Rover and Range Rover is that the reason they've been doing so well and they've been so popular the last decade is because they are rooted in off-roading. And people, even though they'll never take them off-road, same thing with the G-Wagon, right? The idea of being able to like bug out and take them off-road is what sells these vehicles.
Yeah.
And when you're selling a car that then obviously doesn't have that cred, you're really kind of selling into a headwind.
We're also looking at a situation where Scout is seeing well over 50% of Scout reservations are for the range extended version.
Sure, people love hybrids. They love plug-in hybrids. And you know, the ones, the i3s that are selling are the Rexes, right? The ones with the range extender.
Yeah, the old i3.
Yeah.
So to come out with the full electric when the world is really pushing hybrids now is where and I know this car was designed 8 years ago. It's just kind of a challenging thing to get your head around. And then you combine that with the fact that the car that I think would sell better, the Recon, which is the actual off-road
coming
EV. But why didn't they bring that here first instead of the Wagoneer?
You know, this was the last car Mark Allen did, who was a chief designer for Jeep. And he's very proud of it. And I agree. It's very elegant. It just doesn't feel like...
I think he did the Recon too.
I don't know.
I think that was his design as well.
Yeah, this just feels like... I think when this was designed, the thinking was that Wagoneer was going to be its own sub-brand. You know what I mean?
Yes, and I think that would... If they had gone the direction which they were trying to go in, which was to spin Wagoneer off as an ultra-premium brand with the full-size Wagoneer and this, and then have a separate brand for the more affordable Jeeps, this would make sense. But when it's marketed as a Jeep product first and foremost with the Wagoneer badge on the side, I'm not convinced that this is going to resonate with the Jeep buyer. Or an EV buyer, for that matter, because...
So here's an interesting fact, Tommy. So, you know, we went from, in one year, we went from 6% electrified vehicles sold in America, and that includes hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and EVs, to 21%. Last year, 21% of cars sold in America were either plug-in hybrids, or full-on electric cars.
Oh, well, that doesn't mean anything.
But it does mean, it means that...
If 20% of those are hybrids...
I'm not saying 20, I'm saying 21%. I don't know, I don't know their breakout.
Hybrids are a whole nother can of worms.
But 21% electrified vehicle sales last year.
That's terrible. If it's going to be just electrified, it should be like 40. I mean, I thought that was only EVs. It's 20% hybrids and plug-in hybrids.
Yeah, all electrified,
EVs.
21%.
Oh, that's lame. I wonder what the actual EV percentage
is. No, I don't think that's lame. I think... It's taken people a long time even to, like, I listened to this show called CarPro, and this guy's been doing it like a call-in radio show where people ask him about questions about what car they should buy. He's out of Texas, and a lot of the callers are from Texas, and you'd be surprised at how many people call. I would say at least half the people who call in are like, I want the new Tacoma, but I don't want them crazy hybrid one, right? Nor do I want the turbo. I don't trust them.
Yeah.
And so in our world, hybrids are like, oh, no, you know, they've been around since the very first Prius. But for a lot of people, a lot of traditional people, the idea of a turbo, let alone a hybrid, is like way off the off the grid.
That's crazy to me, though, because the hybrid has been around, like you said, in the U.S.
Yeah, but it's only been like Prius.
So 25 years. And we're just now at 20% electrification?
Well, because who's selling them? Toyota is. And by the way, Toyota sold the most cars last year.
Yeah, but Toyota
they sold over a million units in America.
400,000 RAV4s, if half of those are hybrids, that's a lot of hybrids.
Well, it's going to be all hybrids because Toyota's going all hybrids.
And Highlanders. And, I mean, Highlander hybrid's been around for over 20 years.
Right, but that's Toyota.
Yeah, but...
How many hybrids does Nissan have?
They did have hybrids.
How many do they have now?
Not many, but
they
Ford
have none.
Ford had hybrids 20 years ago as well.
Yeah.
So why was it taking 20 years? That's a pathetic number. I think in Japan, something like 80% of all cars sold are not EVs.
Yeah, they're hybrids.
But they are hybridized.
I'm just saying Toyota is, and for a while, even Honda went away from hybrids, right?
Right.
They came back. Now the CR-V is a hybrid. Of course, the Civic hybrid, and they're going in the same direction as Toyota, which is a lot of their cars are going to be hybrids. And look, I think what drives car sales, whether you hate electric cars or don't like electric cars, I think what drives sales of these vehicles is price. And the problem with electric cars, not just the politics, is they've been too darn expensive. And now, because people have decided that they hate them, prices have come barreling down. I mean, really barreling down. And now people are like, well, maybe, you know, this $20,000 EV, you want to take care of this again?
No, we're good.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is horrible for you. Are you worried?
Well, yeah, just a lot of problems, but keep going.
Okay. I'm just saying, you know, price at the end of the day is more determinative, I think, than your politics, than your core belief that turbos suck. At the end of the day, price is what motivates people to buy cars. And if they become cheap enough, then people will be like, yeah, I don't like electric cars, but dang, a free electric car. How can I pass that up? Like, you basically get a free electric car.
Yeah, but companies can't sell free cars.
No, but in the used car market, you know, there's parity. And now, right now, what's happening is electric cars are going below internal combustion engine cars.
Yes.
And so they are kind of the cheapest thing on the market. And the other thing that's happening is, and you know, you're saying that's pathetic, but hybrids are also in such high demand that they present a premium both in price and in demand.
That's right. But I think that, look, where we're going, it's going to be a really tough few years for EVs. I mean, one of the things that's been helping with the price of EVs has been the federal tax credit. And if that goes away, cars are going to get, in some cases, $7,500 more expensive to the average consumer.
Most of that went away.
Well, then it's already gone away.
You know why it went away? Because I think yesterday or the day before, there was a new set of rules in terms of... So Congress passed this law basically saying that the minerals for electric cars...
Yep.
Have to have like a certain percentage of domestic, and they can't be from China, obviously. And that second rule went into effect like 2 days ago. And so, for instance, Volkswagen lost all of its tax credits. In fact, most electric car manufacturers lost that $7,500 tax credit because of that new – this has nothing to do with the new administration. It just has to do with what Congress passed. Well, it was 2 years ago or something. And so a few Teslas are left, but many cars have lost that $7,500.
So that's going to be, I think – another big blow to EVs.
It is.
Huge blow.
It is.
And then what about investment in future charging stations?
That's also been pulled. Trump pulled that. And that was also interesting. So most of that that Biden administration money that was going toward building out the charging stations, most of that was going to the southern states. And Trump killed that. So the money that was going to, you know, the southern states is now gone. So, you could look at it as kind of you voted for, in some ways, you know, against your best interest in that regard, at least.
So all of these are the...
I don't think people care.
All of this is the headwind that the new Jeep Wagoneer and the Dodge Charger are up against, right? So this could be an amazing car, but at this price point, with the challenges and the political challenges that EVs face, I just don't know if it's going to work. And then you couple the fact with the fact that like if this had a gasoline engine, I think it probably could work. If this was $20,000 cheaper with a gas engine... I think a lot of people would be interested in buying it.
Well, I mean, if it had a Pentastar with air suspension and off-road tires, I'd be more excited about it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. And a lot of people feel that way.
Let me ask you this question. I'm getting tired of electric cars. I'm sure people out there are. But, you know, hybrids are red hot. We just bought our first hybrid, which is the Maverick. And you finally had a chance to drive it. And in today's staff meeting, you were saying you were really disappointed by the numbers that it was getting.
Yeah, and I haven't driven it that much.
Yeah.
And we've got, once again, we got a lot of things going against this car. truck.
It's been cold.
It's been very cold.
A lot of snow.
Like low single digits in some cases. We've had some snow. And then we also have the winter fuel blend, which hurts the fuel economy of vehicles. But yeah, I mean, driving it around last few days, have been only averaging about 29 mpg. And considering the sticker says it should be high 30s combined, right? Isn't it 37 combined?
Yeah, so I've been getting, I drove it around last weekend and I was getting 34.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it really matters. I mean, it depends on how you look at it. 34, let's say even 30, 32, whatever, you know, it's supposed to be 37 combined.
Right.
But let's say it's in the low 30s. For a truck, that's pretty darn good, Tommy.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the same usefulness as a truck.
I think it's got 90% of the usefulness that most people need. It's got a bed, you know, it can carry four people in relative comfort, five in a pinch. You know, it's got all-wheel drive. What is it missing that most trucks have?
The problem I'm finding with this truck.
Okay, go for it.
Is on it does car stuff really well.
Yeah.
It's very comfortable.
You know, Ford said that they're trying to sell this to car people, not truck people.
And that makes sense. And I think that's a great plan. And it's pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
It's very easy to park. That is one of the great things.
Yeah, it's small.
It's nice and maneuverable in the city, right? Another good thing. But the problem is, like, I just took that weekend up to the mountains with my friends, right? Yeah. I would have loved to take this. But I couldn't take this because it was snowing and we had all of our stuff. And if we put it in the bed, it would have been ruined, right?
Yeah, but we can get a tonneau cover for it.
So you could do a tonneau cover for it.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But then at that point, why not just get an SUV? And then when I want to do truck stuff, like if I need to move a broken car on a trailer, it doesn't tow enough.
It tows four.
If I need to move
4,000.
If I'm working on the shed renovation, I need to get more plywood and 4x8 sheets of insulation. It will technically hold it, but it's such a faff getting it in there.
Well, it's got that bed.
It's got a little tailgate thing, and then you really have to strap it down. Where I might as well use a big truck.
So it's got a tailgate where you can leave it up a little bit, so that if you put some sheets of wood or plywood in there, they're kind of forced to angle toward the back of the truck. So when you accelerate, they don't come flying out.
And then my initial plan with this truck was that I was planning on buying it for Morgan, right?
Yeah.
For my wife.
And then you got that free EV.
30, and then we got but then now the more I drive it, I'm like, this is not a $36,000 truck. It just seems like way too much money for the lack of capability you get and the lack of, in some cases, interior quality. Like, it's pretty cheap. So I like it to the extent that it works as a car. But I'm not sure at 25 grand, I'd be all into it. Like you said, and this is every new car is 10 grand too expensive. At 36 grand, I'm not sure this is it.
All right. I completely 100% disagree with you, Tommy. I think this truck is priced extremely well. You know, the average new car price now is 48,000.
Sure.
And this is a hybrid. This is an all-wheel drive hybrid. This is a relatively comfortable all-wheel drive hybrid. The seats are really comfy on the interior. I love the fact that it's got both heated seats and a heated steering wheel.
That's nice.
It's got Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. The only thing that's missing for me is wireless charging. But otherwise, it's relatively, I think, quiet on the interior.
Yeah.
It has a very smooth ride because it's got a longer wheelbase. I think it's very utilitarian. It's the kind of vehicle that I think for me, it's the best vehicle we've owned probably in the last 2 years in terms of price and in terms of usability and in terms of fuel economy. It just checks all those boxes for me. And I would love to drive this as a daily driver. My only complaint is it's got a CVT with planetary gears, but when you floor it, it drones. That's my biggest complaint. It's like,
but don't you kind of think so? For 36 grand,
yeah,
you could get a really nice used Ranger, which is going to be able to go off road.
The last generation Ranger it wasn't that great.
Okay, you can get a really nice used Colorado or a used Tacoma.
I'd still rather have the Maverick because it's a hybrid, and that Ranger is going to get, we had it, it's going to get 19 mpg. This is going to get 34. At least that's what I've been getting.
Yeah, I don't know if I would because there's so many sacrifices with this vehicle.
And I would tell you, Tommy, I think the cabin in the Maverick, even though it's officially a compact truck, so it's smaller than a Ranger,
yeah,
I think it's more spacious, or at least feels more spacious than
the
Ranger.
But the bed isn't.
No, the bed isn't. No, the bed, it's 4 foot, right?
With the Ranger, you can tow 6,500 pounds.
Yes, you can. But how often do you do that?
Not often, but I do off-road a lot. and you can't take this. We learned this truck will not go off-road.
Well, it'll go on a dirt road. You wouldn't want to take it to Moab.
But you wouldn't want to even take it on a mile trail. But you know it's so limited.
You know there's a Tremor version coming.
Yeah, but that's going to be $42,000. And then you can get a really nice used F-150.
I'm just saying, for me, Tommy, and I think also that you said something like, well, I'd rather take a bigger truck. A lot of people don't have, you know, three other trucks sitting in the barn.
No,
right?
If
you're the buyer for this,
right,
if you're spending $36,000, the chances of you having a $75,000,
100%,
you know, Duramax
very true.
In the barn are probably pretty low.
But if you do have $35,000 and you are looking for a small truck, you are going to be cross-shopping this against maybe some slightly used mid-sized trucks.
I don't think so. I think people want the warranty, Tommy. I don't think you're going to be shopping it against the truck without a warranty. And also for me, we buy a lot of used cars, but I do love that new car smell, and that's valuable, right? You know how it's been driven. You know how it's been kept up. And when you buy a used vehicle, you're always rolling the dice.
I think for $25,000-$26,000, I'd be into this 100%.
Well, you can get it for $26,000.
Not this one. This one should be $26,000. The one you're going to get for $26,000 is an absolute bean can front wheel drive base model. And that's going to be even worse.
Like I said, Tommy, a Forerunner now, if they're
cost $56,000,
you know, for $20,000 less, which is basically the cost of, you know, a used Civic, it's a hell of a deal. Maybe the solution is here. I'll give you a project. Mm-hmm. Why don't you drive it for a week?
Okay.
Vlog it, right? Uh-huh. So and then see what you think of it after you're done in a week.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great. I think that's a really good plan.
You really haven't driven it much yet.
No, I haven't, and we'll track the fuel economy closely over that week and kind of get a good sense on what it. And I should be doing much more than 29 because all I do is drive on country roads and in the city.
Yeah,
like I'm not doing any interstate.
Yeah, fill it up,
so
reset it.
I'll give it a good, honest try, and we'll see if it wins me over.
Well, so initially we were going to do an episode where we were going to be talking about the great and not so great Toyotas. But I think we're only got like 15 minutes and there's too many Toyotas to go through. So maybe we'll have to save that for another day.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask you with the new year starting, what's your favorite car in our fleet right now?
Probably
the Aston Martin that you can't drive.
Yeah, that's my favorite, the one I can't drive.
Of course it is.
And I really like the Defender.
Okay.
Yeah, the Defender is my favorite car in the fleet, I think.
Let's talk about this. So usually we buy maybe 6 to 10 new cars and used cars a year. Mm-hmm. This year, because of the tax situation and because of uncertainty, we bought a lot of new vehicles in a quick succession.
Yes.
And so one of the used vehicles that we bought was this crappy Range Rover P38 that we bought at the auction. And I was so worried about it because the brakes didn't work. Master brake cylinder was leaking like a bad pipe. So what we ended up doing was buying not a new one, but another old one that was sorted.
Uh-huh.
So we initially spent $1,700 for the P38, 2001 P38. And then a friend of Case's, had a sorted one for $4,000, so we kind of swapped cars. So we gave him the $17,000 one. He sold us a $4,000 one. We sold it to him. And then what do you think of the new Range Rover P38?
I think it's pretty cool. Yeah, I do think it's really cool. I'm don't need to say it, but I'm a sucker for a good Land Rover Range Rover. I just think they have a lot of charm that you're not going to find in any vehicle. And for $4,000, it's a great car. Mary's been driving it the last week, and it hasn't even left her stranded one time. According to the internet, that would have been impossible. But yeah, she's driven it, I think, probably 300-400 miles in the last 5-6 days, and it's been really good. So she's been, I don't know, enjoying it, but she's been getting a kick out of it.
I think she drives it, fills it up with gas, drives it.
Yeah, every time she has to fill it up with gas. No, this has been one of the highlights in the fleet for me. I think it's a fantastic deal for $4,000, solid axles, like you'd find in a Wrangler, really great off-road capability. You get a pretty cool-sounding V8. It's a little rickety. It's a little wobbly, but it's...
People dare say that this is the least reliable of all the Range Rovers.
Yes, the worst car.
The worst ever. Yes. Yeah. Is that true? I mean, ours has 150,000 and it's still trucking along.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true. We're going to find out. Like, these engines have head gasket failures. They have slip liners, which is a big common problem that takes them out. A lot of potential issues with the Rover V8 4.6. But I do love it a lot because it feels pretty special when you're driving it, which is kind of rare.
It's got that command driving position. You're sitting down, you're sitting up looking down on people, which is nice. And the interior is pretty snazzy, Tommy.
Another car I do like a lot, or it's just a truck that we have. I've been driving the Duramax the last few days.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So we bought that at the end of last year. This is the brand new Duramax 2500 Trail Boss. So it's the off-roady HD truck that Chevy builds. And you've been trucking around in that. Tell me, because when you got it, you were kind of cold on it.
Yeah, because I love that Ram. Yeah. I loved how that truck was built out, solid axle, had a great sound, had a really cool look.
We're kind of stepping on Andre's toes, but that's okay.
Bit.
Yeah.
But I do like that the Duramax quite a bit. It's a lot more comfortable and refined.
Than the Ram?
Yes.
And those are fighting words. Well, than the Cummins?
Yeah, I mean, and it's partly because this one is, in my opinion, slightly nicer equipped than our Cummins. And realistically, it was, even though we bought it 2 years later, it was more expensive than the Ram. But I thought it would be, for the experience, I thought it would be $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 more expensive. But it worked out to be $6,000 more expensive, MSRP, of what we paid for it, like six or seven. So I think it's a good truck. The Trail Boss package gives you the rear locker.
It reminds me a lot of the Silverado Trail Boss half ton that we had.
Yeah, also really good truck. Yeah. It's kind of a honest, hardworking unit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like razzle dazzle. There's nothing like you know, like you're not going to, I think, like impress anybody like you might try to do with a G-Wagon or something, right? But it's just a good, solid truck that actually works and does what it's supposed to do.
And I think that
I'm going to get to drive it 2,000 miles very soon.
I think that the interior is very comfortable. The technology is very good. And the power is insane. That's the big difference between this and the Cummins. The Cummins has a lot of torque, but the way this thing just shoots off the line with that 6.6 Duramax is crazy. It really out-accelerates pretty much any other truck on the road. It's nuts how quick this thing will move.
Yeah, like I say, I'm going to drive it to California very soon, so I'm really looking forward to it because I really haven't spent much time with it. And then I got to thank Chevy. They sent us some parts for it.
Yep, so we got some like running boards or rock sliders for it. I don't remember what they sent.
Rock sliders and a power tonneau cover.
Yep.
Yeah, so thank you, Chevy. I'm super excited to put that on, but it's just been so slimy and snowy here that it's really, we need to have a clean truck to be able to mount that stuff on.
The other car that's really impressed me, the last one that we bought new that I thought was going to be a little disappointing because it's not great on paper, but in person it's awesome, is the ID Buzz.
Yeah.
The Volkswagen.
Yeah, so you've been driving that as well. We just did a video where we tried to figure out whether it was going to be a good snow car. Now, I had a very rough start with that car, as you can tell. Or should I say minivan? But the more we drive it, the more it kind of grows on you. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's just so unique and so different, right? It's probably the most cheerful vehicle we've ever owned.
It's the car with the most personality, I think, on the market and the most unique driving experience. You sit really high up, pretty close to the front end with a huge 1960s-like greenhouse. It's got a very comfortable interior with massaging seats and a heated steering wheel, and it's got so much room in the back. So it's a very useful and style-forward car, which is a tough thing to combine into one vehicle. It's too expensive, I think, $72,000 once again. A lot of money.
Same as the Jeep, actually.
Same as the Duramax for what we paid for it, I think. Wasn't that also like 73?
That was 75, I think.
Yeah. But the ID Buzz, if that thing, once again, was $10,000 or $15,000 cheaper, it would be a heck of a vehicle.
I think that's one of the first electric cars that people can't hate.
They do because the range is too low and the price is too high.
Yes.
It does need more range. It has about 200 miles, realistically, 220 miles of
Edmund's range. Edmund's got 266.
Yeah, but
they're in California.
Yeah, they are in California.
In the summer.
In the winter, it's more like 200. So Mary and Jen took it up to the ski resort, which is very close to here, right? Brought it back down. And I barely got it up to the ranch. And that's only maybe a 2.5 hour round trip. So it was a little hair raising bringing it back home the other day. However, I still love it for around town use. It's so comfortable. It's very refined and it's just a fun car.
Yeah. My only criticism of it, would be that, it's too nice for the weather that we're currently experiencing. It's got these like bamboo floor mats. And every time I get in it with my salty snow covered shoes, I feel bad for the thing. 'Cause the interior is very white. With this kind of orange accents, maybe bamboo colored accents. Mm-hmm. And so very stylish both on the inside and the outside. And I just feel like we bought it at the absolutely wrong time. I mean, I bought it during a snowstorm, and it's lived its whole life in the snowstorm. And it really feels like it should be driving down PCH.
And it's pretty good in the snow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the traction mode works pretty, even with the all-season tires. It's pretty effective, which I was impressed with. By the way, my little Fiat, very good in the snow.
Yeah, let's talk about your little Fiat. That's another one. So you've now had a couple weeks with your, I'm calling it your free Fiat, because, of course, you got that as a screaming deal. You bought that, well, you leased it for $1,300 all in. Are you happy with it?
Yes, really happy with it. Yeah, it's like $1,270 and $0 a month. All I did was pay for taxes on this Fiat. It was a deal that the Fiat had going in Colorado for a very short period. Now, the
yeah, we sold six of them, I think, to like employees and friends.
Yes, and then they had a, after the video went up, they had a 300-person wait list is what I heard to get access to these cars. There's my father-in-law. He got one as well. Now, $34,000 car for free for basically 2 years.
Hey!
What?
Hey!
What?
Hey! How could you be complaining about the Maverick at $36,000 when your little city car there that is not four-wheel drive, has no bed, can only get really realistically two people in it, was $34,000?
Because this is the worst deal in humanity. If you pay $34,000 for this car, I'm so sorry. This is like an $18,000 car. No.
Yeah, that's kind of the pot calling the kettle black there, dude.
Here's what I was looking at. I had the option to buy the Maverick off the company for $36,000.
Yes.
Or the option to get this car for free.
Yeah.
If I spent $34,000 on this car, this would be a terrible car. As a free car, pretty good car. Believe it or not, the $0 payment for free for 2 years makes anything pretty good. So I don't think it's a good car at $34,000. I don't think it's a good car at $25,000. But for $0, it's pretty awesome. I had to re-sign the paperwork for the fourth time in a month and a half. The dealership has now messed up the paperwork four times. Read that four times.
Because Stellantis Finance keeps sending it back. Like, this is, how do we give this thing away? Where's our money?
I think I spent a total of 6 or 7 hours in that dealership, including some time on New Year's Day. So that's been frustrating. But the car has been surprisingly good in the snow. And my wife really likes it because she never has to go to the gas station.
There you go. That's the whole trick with electric cars.
She hated going to the gas station. She was always on the E.
Yeah.
But now she just drives it, plugs it in at home, even on a standard level 110 volt outlet. The car's so small, it charges up. She drives it, plugs it in. She's been driving the beans off it. We're going to run out of miles on that car.
You are going to run out of miles.
We're a month in, and we're like 1,500 miles into the lease. So
at the rate you're going, you're going to be at 20,000 in like 15 months or less.
It's going to be like 18 months. I think we're going to be at probably 20,000. And I think we get closer to like...
Hey, in the comments below, what if you run out of miles on a lease, then you just turn it in, or do you just let the car sit there until the lease term expires?
You can turn them in early, but there's usually a pretty big fee involved.
So it just sits.
Yeah. Well, the reason you can't turn a lease in early, one of the reasons, is because you still owe monthly payments on the car.
But you have no monthly payments.
But if there's no monthly payment on the car, maybe I can just give it back to them. They can sell it. The residuals on this car are supposed to be $17,000. And in 27 months, which is the term, there's no way that thing's going to be worth $17,000.
Unless gas goes through the roof.
What's going to happen? Which case,
it might be worth $27,000.
The other cheap lease we have is the Leaf that Mary's been driving.
Yeah.
It's like 10 bucks a month is what we're paying for that car.
Yeah, exactly.
That car is now the official car of Boulder, Colorado, and Longmont, and Denver.
There's so many Leafs.
You see these base Leafs everywhere. At one point, our local Nissan dealer had, I think, one or two Frontiers. They had one Altima. They had one Kicks. And 85 Nissan Leafs on their lot. They took a drone picture because they were stacked like Tetris, front to rear, side to side. 85 Leafs. And they got rid of every single one of them because the lease deal was 10 bucks a month and like 1,500 down. It was insane. So now when you drive around our area, all you see, Nissan Leafs. They are everywhere. But in 2 years, when all these cars go back on return, what's going to happen? They're going to have 400 Leafs on the lot. They're not going to have room for them. They're going to have to start piling them up on schools and on top of restaurants.
Look at this video. See, the bright shoes take away from my big stomach.
There you go.
That's my cunning plan, Tommy.
That's the key.
All right. So... yeah, we'll find out. Interestingly, when I was in San Diego, all of the cool cars there were Teslas.
I wouldn't call a Leaf a cool car.
So Longmont, it's Leafs. La Jolla, it's Teslas.
There you go.
So as we run out of time, I've been doing some thinking about stuff that I absolutely hate in new cars. So could I give you a couple quick, I'm just going to give you a couple quick rants on stuff that I think should have never been invented and will quickly die, and yet manufacturers somehow seem to be pushing it.
Oh, gee, okay.
So I was driving home last night in a Mercedes wagon.
E450 all-terrain.
Yep, and I'm driving along. It's nighttime. I just come back from the Jeep, and you know, it's got this really interesting like LED light that runs the entire width of the cabinet. Mm-hmm. And I had it set for blue, right, which I like because you can. There's like Roy G. Biv, all the colors of the spectrum you can set it for.
Yep.
So I had it set at blue, and it was kind of nice. And then I kind of started watching it, and it started, and I was like, "Is that blue or is that green?" And I'm like, "That's weird." I thought I had, and then all of a sudden, it turned like bright red, and within like 5 miles of the airport, my interior turned into a Berlin disco.
Yes.
And I'm like, what the hell? Why is this changing? Why is, and it's super bright. It's like set at the highest level. And then I counted. It took me, I almost crashed because it took me like 5 minutes to find the setting in the display where the page was where you can have it either go multicolored or go single colored.
Yep.
Four pages in, Tommy.
Yeah.
On the highway. So I don't know what was more dangerous, the thing being in, you know, a Berlin disco or me trying to get it to stop changing colors.
It sounds a little bit like some user error going on there.
There was no user error. I didn't change it at all.
Yeah, but it was set to change automatically. Someone had set, there's a button you can push in the car that has a cycle
colors.
There's
no button. There's a screen.
There's a screen.
That's like four screens in.
But you, if you own that car,
yeah,
guarantee, you buy that car night one. Select your color, and then for the next 9 years you own that car, you would never ever change the color.
What happened to me if I owned that car? The next day I'd sell it.
No, you would not. You're being dramatic. Yeah. You wouldn't sell the car.
It was so miserable, Tommy. That Mercedes is.
But that's
that car is such a good car. That Mercedes, it rides incredibly well. The engine is so powerful.
And you're going to sell it because a little light?
But the infotainment in that car, I just wanna whack myself over the head with a dead fish. It is so cumbersome, so hard to use, so unintuitive. You know what I mean? And it's got not one, not two, not three, but four screens. We were talking about this. What picture is displayed on the passenger screen all the time?
Yes, the passenger screen is dumb.
What's the picture on the passenger screen?
Well, it's currently, and I think you can change it.
Okay.
I bet you can.
Yeah.
But it's currently set to a different E-Class. Like, so you're driving around in your brown E-Class wagon, and the passenger screen has a nice image of a bright blue E-Class sedan, which I think is configurable. But
yeah, good luck trying that.
If you don't get the passenger screen, screw that. That's useless. We both agree. It's a really good car. And I actually think MBUX is pretty intuitive. For the most part, I think it works pretty well.
The best part of MBUX is you go, hey, Mercedes, tell me a joke.
That's your favorite part.
That's the only
part.
That's
a classic dad thing to do.
No, that's a classic thing that works in that car.
But
with their infotainment.
Look, the ambient lighting problem. There are a number of issues that we have in this very privileged journalist life that we look at issues, but owners don't care about.
It's not privilege. Just give me a button. It's also the volume. No volume knob, Tommy. Two haptic controls.
That's annoying.
One on the steering wheel, one underneath.
That is annoying.
Yeah, and they don't work.
I agree.
Right?
That is annoying.
It's either off the volume or it's on.
So
a great car, completely neutered by like, and you wonder. I every time I drive these cars, I'm like, didn't the engineers who designed this and who okayed it ever get in the car and drive it and use it before?
Sure.
They sold it to the public. I'll give you another example of stuff that's absolutely stupid. BMW gesture control. Why do I, you know, car should learn me. I shouldn't have to learn the car, right? Those weird gestures that you can do in a BMW to turn, like you can, you know, you can rotate the air with your finger to bring up the volume. You can rotate the air down to bring up the volume. This is just stuff that nobody ever wanted. Nobody ever will use. And it's just makes the driving experience or living experience with the car miserable.
Well, then don't use it.
Yeah, but what if there's no volume knob? And then the next thing you know, you've got a choice of a slider or like you got to spin your finger in the air.
Those BMWs do have the volume knob.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, there you got the Roman ramp of the day.
I like how you know what I like? I like how you dismiss it by calling it a rant, right? It's easy to dismiss.
Because I think you had some valid points in there, like the haptic sliding for the volume. But like I actually really like the lighting controls in that Mercedes because there are so many. And what I do is I get in the car.
Yeah, now you're just arguing against yourself because you said if you buy that car in 9 years, you'll never change the color.
I get in that car at the beginning of the press loan. Yeah. I select the color and then I never touch it. I never touch it.
You know what you also probably won't touch?
What?
Is the seat control, because the seat control is a haptic, you know, one piece of plastic that also reprograms your seat. So every time you go to turn on your heated seats, if you don't get it just right, you're going to reset where your seat position is.
So what you do is you set your seat position as a user, and then you never touch it.
But that's
for 9 years, you will never touch it.
The problem is that the heated seat control is in the exact same location where the number is for a different setting. Mm. So if you're not careful, what you end up doing is hitting the seat control, which then changes the seat to like where, you know, somebody extremely short will drive it. And it crunches you next to the wheel instead of actually turning on the heated seat. And because it's all one giant button.
I bet in the 9 years you own that car, you would figure it out.
No, you can't. It's too close. The buttons are too close.
I think you would figure it out. You are a smart man, Dad. You could figure out how to turn on the heated seat.
No, I can turn it on. But you're saying if you're at night or if you're not paying attention and you hit the wrong button, which is easy to do in that car, you're going to move the seat. You know, I'm 6'2", and you're going to move the seat to a position that a 4 foot two person's going to want to live in or drive in.
You're the only person driving that car. Why don't you just set the number two as your other?
Well, what if you have a short partner?
Well, then you put them in number one so you don't keep hitting it on accident.
I'm just
solutions.
How about a real button? Wouldn't that be a better solution? How about a real defined button? Because Mercedes, once upon a time, had the world's most brilliant seat controls, which was a control shaped just like a seat that wasn't haptic, that would automatically and intuitively move the position of the seat to exactly where you want it. I will give you something that a lot of cars are doing now that I love, and that is below a certain temperature, they will automatically, the Ranger Raptor does this, and so does the Maverick, they will turn on your heated steering wheel and they will turn on your heated seat, which I love.
Yeah, that's
the Mercedes
good.
Doesn't do that. You got to turn it, that's how I know, because every time I went to turn on the heated seat, I repositioned my seat.
I bet there's a setting somewhere.
This is also the problem. Somewhere, right?
Somewhere is the key word.
Like you said, there's a setting somewhere where you can customize the display on the passenger screen so it's your car.
Yeah.
You think any owner is actually going to dive in and try to figure out where that is?
I think at the dealer they would show the owner.
Oh, good God, Tommy.
And then they would never touch that button ever again.
You spent 6 hours at the dealer trying to sign some paperwork.
Yes, that was very bad.
Did anybody take 30 seconds out of their time to actually explain to you how to charge that car and what the difference between level one, level two.
They did offer, but I've declined it.
Okay.
I said, no, thank you. Well, folks, we'd love to hear your opinion on this Roman rant matter.
Thank you. Hey, and I want to thank the team here for reorganizing our studio.
Yeah, Cole and Mary and Andre, they did a really good job.
We listened to your comments in the last podcast. We had it kind of tilted, so it looked like a book and half the wall was black and red, and the people hated it because it was distracting. So the team got together during the week and reorganized it, and the team did a really good job. So thank you, Mary. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Cole. Thank you, Ian. And thank you, Tommy.
Yeah, thanks, Dad. We'll see you on the next episode. Thanks so much for watching.
And go take care of your
heating problem. We'll figure that out.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Remember, alltfl.com for all of the greatest and latest news, views, and real-world reviews. Ciao.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, oh.